This is Sex Science Saturday here on the Jeff Booth Show, brought to you by the Center for Sexual Expression and Education and Erotic University. There is a new study published in the Journal of Marriage and Family, and like other similar studies, it has come to the exact same stunning conclusion. Abstinence education doesn't work. The study found that young adults who've taken virginity pledges have significantly worse reproductive health outcomes than those who haven't. What the study found was that unmarried adolescent girls and young women who vowed to stay abstinent became sexually active anyway, but were much more likely to get pregnant or to become infected with the human papillomavirus. The study was conducted by researchers at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and they looked at the outcomes for non-marital pregnancy and STIs among people who had abstinence-only education and those who had actual sex education. The difference in this study is that they looked at these two groups and wondered if the young women who did take the abstinence pledge would be at different levels of risk and have different things that would affect them. It's estimated in the study that 12% of girls and women under the age of 25 in the United States have taken an abstinence pledge. Now, we know that this is pretty much a failure because only 3% of American adults wind up waiting until marriage to have sex. 3%. So, yes, the pledge itself is a failure, but it's worse than a failure. And here's the numbers. In the study, 51% of the women who took the abstinence pledge were HPV positive, compared to 33% of those who did not. And women who took the abstinence pledge were 50% more likely than non-pledgers to get pregnant outside of marriage. Anthony Pake is the associate professor of sociology at the University of Massachusetts and a lead author of the study, and he said, it's pretty clear why this happened. It's because abstinence pledgers probably receive abstinence-only education, which means they're not taught about condoms or other forms of contraception. He said, our research indicates that abstinence pledging can have unintended negative consequences by increasing the likelihood of HPV and non-marital pregnancies, the majority of which are unintended. Abstinence-only sex education policy is widespread at the state and local levels and may return at the federal level, and this policy approach may be contributing to the decreased sexual and reproductive health of girls and young women. One of the topics that comes up here quite frequently is the subject of penis size. What's the average penis length, and what do people think is the preferred penis length? Well, there's a new survey conducted by the online medical website Dr. Ed. It's based in Britain. It surveyed both men and women and was asking about, among other things, what the ideal penis length is. Now, there was one major fail in the survey, which renders its results rather questionable, despite the fact that it had a decent sampling size. So you had 1,148 men and 973 women involved in it. But they didn't ask one question. What was someone's sexual identity? Did they have sex with men or women? So not knowing that kind of skews the results, but the one consistent piece of data is that in every country they asked, they wondered, you know, what was the average penis length and what was the ideal penis length. The average penis length was always shorter than what was considered the ideal penis length for both men and women. And despite the claim that size doesn't matter, 67.4% of women said that penis size is somewhat important, with 11.2% saying it's very important. That's a pretty impressive 78.6% who think that penis size does have some relevance, at least among women. Another interesting bit of data across the board in all the countries is that men in general thought that the average and the ideal penis sizes were larger than what women thought were the average and ideal penis sizes. And here in the United States, we were on the high end amongst all the different countries in thinking of what the ideal penis length was. It came in at 6.8 inches. But even in the high end and the low end weren't that dramatically different. In the United Kingdom, it was 5.68 inches. To the high end, which was Austria, with 7.04 inches. So we learn a couple of interesting things from this. The variation isn't as wide as you might think. And if you're a guy traveling in Austria and trying to pick up women, it's probably better if you're packing. The good news is that we can now treat prostate cancer pretty effectively. The bad news is that those treatments lead to erectile dysfunction, whether it's removal of the entire prostate gland or radiation therapy or hormone therapy. There is a new treatment, and it's probably about 2 years away from being available, can treat prostate cancer in the early stages without leading to impotence. Here's how it works. They inject a drug into your bloodstream. This particular drug interacts with infrared light, so all the doctors have to do is shine infrared light on the prostate, and it destroys the blood vessels that are feeding the tumor, and that kills the tumor. The drug itself is made from a bacteria that's found in a sea plant. Over 400 men have taken part in a European trial. It's looking very, very promising. So the way it works is, under general anesthesia, they take a series of fiber optic rods, and they're pushed through the abdomen into the prostate. They then shine a laser light down the rods, which activates the toxic light-sensitive drug, and that destroys the cancer cells. What happens is that the light causes the production of chemicals known as oxygen-free radicals, and those destroy the tumor's blood vessel and the tumor, but it doesn't do any harm to the nearby organs. And 3 to 4 hours after the procedure, which takes about 90 minutes, the drug is totally eliminated from the body. Patients can go home the same day. And it's already been approved for use in South America when they did extensive trials in Mexico.